Namaste. So, one of the things that we hear in Sanatana Dharma, in the concepts of Sanatana Dharma, is the practice of sacrifice. And very often we'll see the images of sacrifice with fire and all kinds of things being put into it. Even here you'll see some of these yagna going on. But what exactly is yagna? So we all know that behind all these rituals and many aspects of religions, there is a great symbolism involved, and the real sense is inner. So always there has been a double sense. One is just to preserve the whole thing. There is an external action which is symbolic of an inner truth. But it is preserved in this way, so that the common person, somebody who is not yet equipped for the inner, at least practices it, and out of that, some people will pick up that true inner significance. Take for example, we have in certain religions, and it is very crude, very primitive cultures, if we can use the word culture, but it's there even in some tribal areas of India, this idea of animal sacrifice. So what really is animal sacrifice? Animal sacrifice, you actually pick up an animal and sacrifice, which God will be pleased by all this. Basically, the concept of animal sacrifice is also to sacrifice the animal within us. But it is put across in this way. So the same thing applies to the law of sacrifice. And we see that the law of sacrifice is mentioned way back in the Vedas. And where does the sacrifice begin? The one Purusha. Because creation has to be formed. So how do you have the creation? So the Purusha who emerges, the gods perform the sacrifice on the Purusha. So different parts of his body are being used as a sacrifice to create this universe. So not only that, the social order, we see that comes from the Purusha. So out of, for example, out of his, hairs on his skin, come out the plants and trees like that. This is a huge. Similarly, in Ashwamedh sacrifice, the sacrifice of the great horse, we see in Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, the whole horse is described as the cosmos. So the first thought that comes, the first idea behind sacrifice is to know the interconnectedness of creation, because it's the one Purusha. So he's always connected. We may look at things as different, but there is the interconnectedness of creation, and they are all held together in the consciousness of the one. But when we forget it, then the problem comes. Then there is the separation, me, mine, you, yours, and the problem comes. There's a very nice saying in English that I had heard, that when two people, they love each other and enclose themselves, cutting off the world, then there is a problem. But when they stand together and face the world, now see the difference. One is that there is a universality, and the other is where me and my happiness. Most of the cases, this is what happens, that two people come together, then me, my family, my interest, my welfare, and the whole thing hardly works out. You have everything, but you don't have happiness. Whereas when people come together, like you see ancient rishis, beautiful, where they came together, but they were always engaged in good of the world. It was nothing meant for themselves. So that's precisely what we have. The first idea of sacrifices, and that's what we see Prajapati performing sacrifices. So the first idea of sacrifice is that everything belongs to the one, not even to everybody. This is the mistranslation into socialism. Everything belongs to the one. And from the one, it is spread out in everyone. When we say everything belongs to everyone, now the difference is that which everyone, generally we think of human beings. But everyone is not just human being, every particle of creation. So the whole idea of sacrifice is that there is an interconnectedness, which is something which today we know by science also. So when we practice sacrifice, it means we are living in the spirit that nothing really belongs to me. It belongs to the all, through the one. And if I keep offering my things to the one, now it is up to him. See, that's why the Gita's whole idea of nishkam karma, that we have released some action or energy of action into this creation. Now it has gone to the one. What he will do with it, whom he will pass it on, whether he will give it to us, in what form, where, it's left to him. So this is the first aspect of sacrifice. Second is that sacrifice is not about self-immolation. So some people think that sacrifice and self-giving means I keep on, like a martyr, I keep on taking suffering. So some people ask this question, that I am living in a family and, you know, my family doesn't understand me, so they keep on becoming a martyr because they have heard the word unselfishness, selflessness, self-giving. So they feel that self-giving means that I keep on doing everything as a duty to everyone. But that is never the sense of sacrifice. It is, if we do that, we'll become a football whom anybody and everybody uses and kicks at the mercy. This is a complete mistranslation. We are not expected to become martyrs at the altar of the ego of others. This is never the sense of sacrifice. So what is the sense of sacrifice? Sacrifice is something which is taking place within us, not to somebody else. Sacrifice is when we sacrifice the lower into the fire and thereby lift it up to the higher. It's like picking up gold with all the dross in it. And then we put it into fire. You pass it through all the processes of, you know, sieving, then water and everything, and then finally fire. So what happens at the end? The value of gold increases. So sacrifice is not a means of self-immolation. Sacrifice is a means of self-fulfillment. Because you are having the same thing but in its purer and better forms. So this is the second idea of sacrifice. So from there comes the third, that it is not something which is outer that has to be sacrificed, but it is the inner that has to be sacrificed. So we come back to the same idea of Tyaga and Sannyasa. The difference is in Tyaga and Sannyasa. Tyaga is an inner renunciation and Sannyasa is an outer. But here it's not just renouncing. We are engaged in the same activity, all the activities of life. But we are constantly purifying it, constantly uplifting it. So Sri Aurobindo speaks very beautifully that, you know, when he writes about the Karma Yogin, how does a Karma Yogin really arrive at the fulfillment? Not like Gyan Yogins will regard this world as illusion. But the Karma Yogin will use the illusion. He will go through the illusion. And he will purify it. He will not be in a haste to cut the knot of bondage because, you know, he will say that, oh, this is an illusion. He will not do that. He will enter into the illusion fully conscious that it is an illusion, but within the illusion there is a truth which is present. And he is going to extract that truth and lift it to its ultimate possibility. That's why we see in the Gita there is so much emphasis on sacrifice. So this is the other part. And the other aspect of sacrifice is that when, you know, we have that famous saying of Yajnavalk, which Sri Aurobindo quotes here in Synthesis also. So when Yajnavalk is asked that why does one love the wife, the family and the children and country, and Yajnavalk replies that it is for the sake of the self. Now Sri Aurobindo gives it a completely new meaning. He says, as is the self, so is the sacrifice. So we may sacrifice things. But we may do it for some egoistic satisfaction. So, you know, there are people who may sacrifice in the office, let us say, you know, they do work, they go out of their way to do work. But all the time they are eyeing on promotion, they are eyeing on what they will get out of it, maybe a greater pay package. So that sacrifice has no value. It is done out, actually done out of bargain, though it looks like a sacrifice. Whereas the true sacrifice is that it is done for the higher self. So when one is working in the office, one is working in everyday life, it is being done for the higher self. That takes us back to that question, how to do works in the world. We have to do works in the world in the spirit of sacrifice. So this is the basic thing. And then we read something very beautiful, that Sri Aurobindo's own words, where he reveals to us the deeper truth of sacrifice. So this is from the Synthesis of Yoga, and this is the chapter Sacrifice. He starts by revealing to us, with sacrifice as their companion, says the Gita, the All-Father created these peoples. The acceptance of the law of sacrifice is a practical recognition by the ego that it is neither alone in the world nor chief in the world. So this is the first illusion we have to get rid of before we get rid of other illusions. It is because we carry this illusion that we think of my own experience, my own nirvana, my own transformation. That's why in Sri Aurobindo's yoga, if one is saying that I want to get transformed, it's a non-starter. There is nothing like a personal realization. It has to be a collective thing by its very nature, because that's what has gone in the origin of creation. It is its admission that even in this much fragmented existence, there is beyond itself and behind that, which is not its own egoistic person, something greater and completer, a diviner all which demands from it subordination and service. So they said, but this truth can be misused. Misused is that you see in families what happens, and even recently I was, it's a very touching incident that what happens to the ladies in the house, that everybody has finished the food. She's the last one. Sometimes, you know, even food is not left. This used to be a state, at least now things are changing. In the name of sacrifice. But that is not at all the sacrifice that is being spoken of here. It's a very profound truth which is being spoken. And what is that profound truth? Now Sri Aurobindo reveals to us. The law of sacrifice travels in nature towards its culmination in the complete and unreserved self-giving. It starts with this. But was it, what is its culmination? A complete and unreserved self-giving. It awakens the consciousness of one common self in the giver and the object of the sacrifice. So it really has a meaning when it is no more a duty done towards somebody else. There is no somebody else. In self-giving, there is a recognition that it is our own self. It may sound impossible. How can it be? Because all our senses, our mind, our habit is simply that there is otherness of self. I am sacrificing for someone. But the principle of sacrifice is there is no someone. There is only one. The sum is removed and only one is kept. So now the training ground, he speaks of it. This culmination of sacrifice is the height even of human love and devotion when it tries to become divine. So, you know, it's a training ground. Human love is one of the most natural powers given in human beings to practice this. Not as a practice, but to experience this even for a moment. So this where he reveals to us, the culmination of sacrifice is the height even of human love and devotion when it tries to become divine. For there too the highest peak of love points into a heaven of complete mutual self-giving. Its summit is the rapturous fusing of two souls into one. That is the ultimate. So, it's not just an external giving. It's a giving at all levels where two souls fuse and become one. Now, it's a possibility which we see, you know, in the history of spiritual literature of the world. And now he comes to the profounder idea of sacrifice. The vulgar conception of sacrifice is an act of painful self-immolation, austere self-mortification, difficult self-effacement. That's not something which God wants. Nobody wants. No divine being will ever want that. That, you know, one is getting pained, like you see those sadhus sleeping on bed of nails. No, God will like to see his children doing these kind of things. You know, suffering and doing it, you know, as an act of duty. Some people do go through a lot of fasting and all this when they, you know, 40 days Ayyappa temple pilgrimage, when they stop drinking alcohol, stop eating meat. First of all, it's hardly sacrifice, good for you. But, you know, all the austere practices, sometimes people walk barefoot or they will give some part with some money, they will, you know, offer hairs. All this has nothing to do with sacrifice. This is just a complete, it's more of an egoistic self-satisfaction. That I have pleased God. Now 40 days I have not taken drinks and I have not eaten meat. Now rest of the 320 days or 325 days I can indulge in it. It's like a sanction to start with. But this, these things have been incorporated in religion mainly because, you know, okay, 40 days if you don't take alcohol, maybe you will get rid of the habit. So it's a purely, you know, hygienic purposes. But this has nothing to do with sacrifice. So Sri Aurobindo says it's a vulgar conception that one has to self-immolate. This kind of sacrifice may go even as far as self-mutilation and self-torture. At least I know that there are people who lose their balance and they sometimes end up mutilating themselves. And we know Ravana, what he was doing, cutting off his head and offering to God. And God is replacing back his head. So it's not that he was very pleased. He was horrified, for all you know. What is this man doing? 10 times he put it back. But he didn't understand. So finally God appeared and said, ask whatever boon you ask. See, the same story can be seen. Oh, he was such a great... he was sacrificing his head. Unless you take it symbolically, he was sacrificing the ego. But here again we see that the divine was not accepting the sacrifice. He was putting it back on his head. I am not accepting your sacrifice. But either which way, this sacrifice has no meaning at all. It's a crude and vulgar conception. Yet, in an extreme asuric nature, it is okay. Like, you know, people fast. They fast for many days. They torture their body. It's okay to fast if you do it for health reasons. And if you don't feel the need. But don't use a word like sacrifice. These things may be temporarily necessary in man's hard endeavor to exceed his natural self. So you'll see some of the communities who are very, otherwise very indulgent. They take to these measures. You know, 40 days we will not eat from morning after sunrise before sunset. And not only you are torturing yourself, you are torturing everybody. What if a person comes to your house? You won't give. No, you won't get anything. It's my experience in Dubai during Ramzan days. Can't carry water, can't ask for water in any place. Because, so you have to do it all clandestinely. Why? Because from morning with sunrise till sunset, you are not supposed to have anything. Now this is a very vulgar idea. It's there in every religion, by the way. But here it's very striking. Because it's very, it's too much ostentatious. So these things may be temporarily necessary if the egoism in his nature is violent and obstinate. So for such kind of humanity, maybe you need to do something very physically. If the egoism in his nature is violent and obstinate, it has to be met sometimes by an answering strong internal repression and counterbalancing violence. And you will see it. Start looking very carefully, you will discover that the impulse of asceticism of that kind, hardness, bareness, I'll sleep on the floor, I'll put a brick under my head as pillow. Imagine what must be happening to God. Sometimes I feel we give him so much pain. If your child does it, will you like it? And you know, when Dilip Kumar Roy, because he used to have this problem with very strong vital, with all kinds of tendencies, but he was another part very beautiful. So he was so troubled by it. So once he says, I have realized that, you know, I must take to the ascetic path. And Shobindu is saying, no, no, no. So he gives him a list of things that he's going to do. So he says, one of them is I'll give up my tea and rasgullas. Then he says, I'll shave my head. I'll sleep without mosquito net, anything, without fan. I'll sleep on the floor. So now you must be happy. What do you say, sir? And Sri Aurobindo says, happy, I am horrified. I am horrified to imagine Dilip coming with a shaved head with all the mosquito bites over his head. It's horrifying. Imagine going to the Anandamaya in this way. So that is not the idea of sacrifice. So when people start doing, I'll wear only one color cloth, it may be necessary if within you, see, after all, who will do this? If you are afraid that if I have many colors, I'll get attached. Isn't it? I'll never use AC. Why? Because you think you will get attached. If you are inwardly free, it won't matter to you. You will be like Meera, that if you are giving me a floor, I'll sleep on the floor. Not that I am deliberately seeking a floor. But if you give me a palace and palanquins, I'll sleep in the palace and the palanquins. Why not? Both are equally acceptable. Because they are both gifts of the divine. You know, I remember once, and it touched me very deep, that how deep rooted is this foolish conception in the mind of India, where you have the examples of Lord Shri Krishna as the Yogi Yogeshwar, who is the king of Dwarka. So, once somebody was remarking me about a story of some devotee who, about whom someone raised a question. That he travels way back, it's in 60s or something. Oh, he travels and comes to places, then why does he stay in 5-star hotels? So, this lady was recounting me. She said, I didn't know what to reply. I said, what is there to reply? You should have said, how does it matter? where he stays. If he can stay in a 5-star hotel, he stays in a 5-star hotel. But how does it matter whether you are staying here or there? It's your inner state. But she was not very clear. So she asked him that, why do you do this? People are asking me. So his reply was that, actually, I have to meet corporate people from whom I want to get money for the work. Now, if I stay in a small little flat, they will not even meet me, let alone, you know, think about giving money. Or if they meet me, they will give me some couple of thousand rupees and say it's okay. So I have to do this. It's part of the thing. Second is, he said, but even in that hotel, I sleep on the floor because I am much more comfortable sleeping on the floor. Now, it's not even necessary that you have to sleep on the floor. The important point here is that this kind of idea that if you are a spiritual person, your life has to be like this. You have to wear one color cloth, you have to sleep on the floor, you have to, you know, torture yourself, has nothing to do with really sacrifice. Divine does not want us to do that. So Sri Aurobindo reveals to us that if we are crude, if we are more asuric in nature, strong ego, extreme vital desires filled with them, then it may be necessary, because, you know, it's needed for this kind of tendency to meet with a strong counter opposing tendency in nature. If the egoism in his nature is violent and obstinate, so this we must understand, because otherwise people judge by that. The moment anybody walks with one colored clothes, oh, sadhak, it doesn't go out. Why? What is there? If you have food somewhere outside, you'll get corrupted. Is the divine so weak, divinity so weak that it'll get corrupted by food, it'll get corrupted if you go and watch a film? People thought so. When in the ashram movie started, people thought like that. And slowly she removed all these cobwebs in the mind of people. That it's not these things. We have to understand the principle behind it. Yes, if you go and watch movie in a cinema hall, if you are not conscious enough, you are in a crowd, which is never a good thing, because crowd means all kinds of vibrations. That is the idea. It's not that watching a movie per se is going to corrupt us. They are beautiful films, and if you watch it, there is nothing wrong with that. But if you, yes, go into a crowd, not only movies, cinema, anywhere, malls, they are not very good places. And if you go there, if you have to go there, you should know how to stay in that state, beautiful state. And remain, that's what Sri Aurobindo says, create your own atmosphere and go with that. So, this is the revelation. It has to be met by an answering strong internal repression and counterbalancing violence. But the Gita discourages any excess of violence done to oneself. And now something very beautiful. It is Krishna. For the self within is really the Godhead evolving. It is Krishna. It is the divine. It is not to be troubled and tortured as the titans of the world trouble and torture it. Famous Gita, you know, when he describes Deva, Asuri, Sampada, it speaks of the Asura as those who know not that I dwell within the body, and they despise and torture it. So all kinds of tortures we give to the body is actually torturing the Lord within, because who takes that poison ultimately? And it is Sri Krishna who is inside. How we should treat him. So this is the first thing he reveals. It is not to be troubled and tortured as the titans of the world trouble and torture it. This is an asuric tapasya. You'll see all these Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyakaksha, they are standing on one foot. All these, this is not the way of tapasya. Tapasya is a one-pointed concentration on the Lord, and wherever we are, we can do it. That's the beauty of it. But to be increasingly fostered, cherished, luminously open to a divine light and strength and joy and wideness. This is the path. To cherish Krishna and open it. What does he like? You know, when there is a Pushti Sampradaya in Vaishnava, some other people may know it. So there you don't ask anything from Krishna, because he is the baby Krishna. So what do? You wake him up. You ask him. You can't ask him anything. You ask him, what do you want? And do things as he wants. It's a tremendous training in learning to obey the divine. What will make you happy? You see how mother in one word so beautifully summarized it. When Sri Aurobindo withdrew physically, then some of these people were very worried. What will happen to us? They didn't know. It's mother's love because of which. So one of them, you know, was sleeping in Sri Aurobindo's room, suddenly thought that maybe I'll be asked not to sleep there anymore. And very hesitatingly he went to the mother and mother said, why? You continue sleeping there. What is the problem? Then Dilip Kumar Roy, again. So Dilip Kumar Roy mother says, one sentence he summarized is, we are not here to please ourselves. We are not here to please others. We are here to please the Lord. Shurvindu loves you. I don't need any other reason. So this is the way, this is the approach. It is not oneself, but the band of the spirits, inner enemies that we have to discourage, expel, slay upon the altar of the growth of the spirit. So now we have to look at it in a different sense. What we have to really slay, not an activity, but something else. These can be ruthlessly excised, whose names are desire, wrath, inequality, greed, attachment to outward pleasures and pains, the cohort of usurping demons that are the cause of the soul's errors and sufferings. They have to be slain. And human life is a training ground. It's not that we will not fight anymore because, you know, be in the battlefield, but slay these things. That's why people can't understand the Gita. I've even heard someone saying, oh, you read the Gita and practice the Gita, but don't look at the Kurukshetra. Why not? Kurukshetra is a perfect example. In the battlefield, to be in a state of compassion, to be in a state where there is no anger, wrath, hatred, jealousy, ambition that I am going to usurp a throne, throw them away and just engage in the battle in the spirit of sacrifice to the Lord and let him decide who will be the victor, who will be the loser. So look at the whole attitude, it changes. So what we have to sacrifice? I'll read again. These can be ruthlessly excised, whose names are desire, wrath, inequality, greed, attachment to outward pleasures and pains. Again, they will come, but don't be attached. Don't seek things only for the sake of the outward. The cohort of usurping demons that are the cause of the soul's errors and sufferings. These should be regarded not as part of oneself, but as intruders and perverters of our real, of ourselves real and diviner nature. These have to be sacrificed in the harsher sense of the word, whatever pain in going they may throw by reflection on the consciousness of the seeker. So it is not the activity, not action. You see, people again think that if you're enjoying good food, it is, you're deviating from yoga. No. Shivinda says equality doesn't mean a blur indifference to all kinds of things. If you get it, you enjoy it. You should know the taste difference. But if you don't get it, you are not hankering. Oh, I want that. When will this come? You are going, you are troubled, restless, seeking opportunities to get it. But when you get it, you know, Shurvindo, so such a beautiful thing. Once, when mother is not there physically, it has happened once. And Champaklalji used to feel for the Lord that, you know, he likes sweets, but he is not allowed to eat it. So he asks Shurvindo, he says, sir, would you like to have some sweet? And Shurvindo says, what is it? Pantua. If it is Pantua, I can try. What a beautiful way, gentlemanly way. If it is Pantua, I can try. So if it is there, something we don't have to do it deliberately that from today, I used to like gulab jamun, I am not going to eat it from today. That's a very harsh way of doing things. We don't have to do it. If you get it, relish it. But don't start looking for opportunities for getting it from here and there and everywhere. So they are not to be regarded as one's true nature, but as intruders. These have to be sacrificed in the harsher sense of the word. But the true sense of sacrifice is not self-immolation. It is self-giving. Its object not self-effacement, but self-fulfillment. How does self-fulfillment comes? Fulfillment comes when there is an expansion, a widening. Because the wider we become, the more joy we receive from this world. The narrower we become, the more unhappy we are. So it leads to self-fulfillment. So that's the beauty of it. Its method not self-mortification, but a greater life. You are getting a pure gold instead of the imperfect base metal. Of course, it means a little more trouble. Not self-mutilation, but a transformation of our natural human parts into divine members. No activity is to be left out. but it has to be transmuted into something divine. Not self-torture, but a passage from a lesser satisfaction to a greater ananda. So every time we can choose. It's not about, again we go back to the same words of the Isha Upanishad, tena tyaktena bhunjita. You sacrifice the lesser for a greater. And if one cannot sacrifice the lesser, then it's okay. It's not about being morally right or wrong. It's like you are happy with the lesser. But if you want the original, then one has to sacrifice the lesser for the greater. This is the path. There is only one thing painful in the beginning to a raw or turbid part of the surface nature. It is the indispensable discipline demanded, the denial necessary for the merging of the incomplete ego. But for that, there can be a speedy and enormous compensation in the discovery of a real, greater or ultimate completeness in others, in all things, in the cosmic oneness, in the freedom of the transcendental self and spirit, in the rapture of the touch of the divine. So initially the only difficulty is that ego. Why should I? People have this question, oh, why me? Hare, why not you? Shiva drank like Nilkantha the poison of the world. Did he say why me? That is the difference between Shiva and ordinary humanity. So imagine if Shiva would have said why me? I am going to take all the goodies are going to Narayana, Indra, even the titans are taking. Shiva got nothing in that great sacrifice, Samudra Manthan. He gets something, the world poison. He drinks it. Now this is a different act. Why not? Why not me? There is this aspect in the world, why not me? This thinking about oneself, my ego, what am I getting in anything for that matter, this is what we have to give up and let it go. Our sacrifice is not a giving without any return or any fruitful acceptance from the other side. It is an interchange between the embodied soul and conscious nature in us and the eternal spirit. For even though no return is demanded, yet there is the knowledge deep within us that a marvelous return is inevitable. So this is the paradox, that if we try to catch it, we lose it. I think I several times have shared this example of Vivekananda when he was asked what is the nature of true love. So he puts his hand, says, put a drop of water. He says, this is true love. What is other love? He holds water and it slips away. This is the difference. So when you have that freedom and there is that complete self-giving without wanting to appropriate, the moment you do it, you see suffering will come. Now people will say, okay, that is all very fine in theory, but practically how to do it? All this is practical. But still they may say, you know, I did so much for so and so and I got nothing in return. Now there is something very beautiful Sri Aurobindo is going to reveal to us. Last, there is to be considered the recipient of the sacrifice and the manner of the sacrifice. Can we really apply this principle to anyone and everyone? Maybe the person doesn't deserve. Who are we to decide who deserves, who doesn't deserve? If divine were to one moment think that let me give only to the deserving, not a single soul will be left. See, I often use this example. I tell people, you know, and people say that this kind of love, I say, see, this is the template that we have received from the Divine Mother. Because she has given love like that. After that famous story of Shiva, the only other story that qualifies, but it goes to the higher level. You know, the Shiva story of Somnath, Ishwar. All the Titans' mother, Diti, mother of the Titans, she comes and says that, look, this is not fair. The gods have heaven. But for my children, you have created the netherworlds. So Shiva says, yeah, you have a point. Okay, fine. They can go to heaven. But how? Indra will not allow. Okay, they can pour water over the Shivling, this particular Jyotirling, and they will be transported to heaven. Now Shiva is given the word. Nobody can say anything. So they start passing on to heaven, one by one. Indra is not very happy, but Shiva is Shiva. So they go there. But your nature is not changed. So they are very unhappy there. Suddenly they see Kamdhenu. And then they start fighting. Whose house this Kamdhenu will be? They look at nice, nice vases and they say, I want to take it to my home. You see the difference? In Japan, mother speaks of a story which is so touching that there is a hill temple where when you go there, now there is a place where you keep the chappals. Nobody is around. So you can keep it, give the money there and you come back. It's nobody is there to really collect it. And I have often felt this is the most beautiful way to do things. As a doctor in private practice, I never went into private practice for this one reason, totally unfit and unsuitable. But if ever money, people said, no, but you have to take money to survive if you do private practice, because this aspect was there that, you know, you are not healing anybody. People are getting healed because of the grace. When you are conscious of that, and then that too, somebody's suffering is being relieved. How can you ask money for that? So I said, this doesn't go with my inner temperament. He said, but if you do private practice, you have to take money. So I said, okay, I have a way. I'll keep a box and I'll leave it to everybody, whether they put it or they don't put it. And if you really trust the divine, at the end of the day, you will get what you need. That is how Sri Aurobindo lived. Whatever he used to put it in a plate and said, well, whatever I need, God gives it to me. Now, this is called living with the trust in life. So here, he is, you know, who is the recipient to whom? So this idea, so these demons, when they go, they have to come back because they start fighting and they are ultimately thrown out. Now that's a story, it goes into many aspects and that story remains incomplete, which mother has completed it here. So what happens in that story, all these demons are thrown out. And divine mother says, nothing doing. You can't enter like this. You have to change yourself. They say, but Shiva has told us. So divine mother is appointed. Ganesh is the Gananayak, you know. So he stands guard. He says, I don't allow any demon to enter into heaven anymore. They have ransacked the place. But Shiva appears because they invoke Shiva. They say, you told us, so we are qualified. We have the valid visa. How can they deny? So Ganesh says, I can't help it, but I have been asked by the divine mother to stand guard. So this is the second time when Shiva confronts Ganesha. Very interesting story. But this time the difference is when Shiva confronts Ganesha, the divine mother appears in all her splendor. She says, they are following what you have told them and he is following what I have told him. And there is a confrontation between the Lord and his Shakti. And of course, we know who will be the victor. So, but the Divine Mother completes the promise of Shiva. Here, she has accepted all kinds of people without questioning. She has said, doesn't matter. I know when you come with Asuric tendency, but it is my job to transform you into the Devic type. So this is a different, she has slightly, you know, that time the promise remained incomplete. I remember, you know, watching it and I said, oh, this is the promise. Now she has completed. That time she confronted Shiva, said nothing doing. They can't enter. But after all, Shiva has promised. So that promise has to be kept. So little faith, little devotion, offer a little milk, come, entry. Nature is the same. But she has said, okay, now I will take charge. No more Indra and all these fellows. I'll transform them so that they learn that Kamdhenu doesn't belong to you, but belongs to everybody. So when you look at the commune, this is the training of the commune, that nothing really belongs to you. Everything belongs to everyone. This is one of the training we get in the ashram life. The sacrifice may be offered to others, or it may be offered to divine powers. It may be offered to the cosmic all, or it may be offered to the transcendent supreme. The worship given may take any shape, from the dedication of a leaf or flower, a cup of water, a handful of rice, a loaf of bread. See Shiva's story? It could be anything you could offer. To consecration of all that we possess and the submission of all that we are. But now comes the real masterstroke. Whoever the recipient, whatever the gift, it is the supreme, the eternal in things, who receives and accepts it. Even if it be rejected or ignored by the immediate recipient. Here comes the completeness. When we give something to someone, it should not be that I am giving to you. This is an egoistic way of doing it. Whom am I giving? To the Lord. You know that very touching story one can look at it either which way. But somebody was narrating that he stood in the queue to go to Nalnida's body, and someone put him, and he was a bit hesitant because he had never bowed down and touched anybody's feet except Mother and Sri Aurobindo. He said, I should not be doing it, but doesn't know. So he is in that state. So he thought, okay, I'll not touch his feet. I'll just greet him and say, Bon fait, Nalnida. So as he went in front of Nalnida, suddenly Nalnida stood up. He said, you can bow to the Mother and Sri Aurobindo in me. It was his way of teaching. I had a different experience. I had same thought. Same way, similar way. But this time in the queue with Champaklalji. Now Nalnida is knowledge oriented. Champaklalji is power. So somebody said, Champaklalji, so I didn't know anything. He said, yeah, okay. I mean, I'm getting to see him gratis. Why not? So they wrote on my card, see. This is how it used to be written. See means after the meditation, you go and see Champaklalji. I had no idea. What does it mean? But since I am coming there and it's something to Sri Aurobindo's room and this is something being told, but in my mind I was very clear. I am not going to touch anybody's feet in the world except Sri Aurobindo and the mother. I had stopped touching my parents' feet, mandir, everywhere. I said, bowing down is only to Sri Aurobindo and the mother. So I went there. And Champaklalji, I was told, anyways, doesn't allow anybody to touch his feet. I said, that's perfect. Suits me well. But when I went there, it was not Champaklalji. It was light. A body of light. And I just couldn't help. I forgot everything. And I was, next moment I realized, many other things happened. But next moment I was at his feet. And Champaklalji is not also, asking me to go away. And then he blesses and then he gives flowers and all that. I mean, it's an amazing experience. That moment, you are forced to see the divine in the person. But we have to do it consciously. It should not be only one person, two persons. In our everyday dealing with life, when we give something, it should not be that person. The moment you bring in that person, it is going to be painful. But it is to the divine. So whoever be the recipient, even if he rejects it, look at the beauty. He may reject it. But you have done this with this bhav, the divine has accepted it. For the supreme who transcends the universe is yet here too, however veiled in us and in the world and in its happenings. He is there as the omniscient witness and receiver of all our works and their secret master. He is everywhere, in everyone. And if we live with this state, life can become beautiful. Then what is there? Nothing is hidden. Everything is before the eyes of the Supreme and given to Him. And receiver of all our works and the secret master, all our actions, all our efforts, even our sins and stumblings and sufferings and struggles are obscurely or consciously known to us and seen or else unknown and in a disguise, governed in their last result by the One. So we again these two things, the sense of the sacred. So some people have this, I will not use ring by mother's symbol or a locket. Why? Because I indulge in sins. So this thought comes in human mind. I also had this thought that nobody can be perfect. There are many things in nature you may inadvertently do which is not worthy of the divine presence. Then I said, in any case, he's the eternal witness. This is his job. Change me. So whatever is there, he should know. Why should anything should be hidden from him? So you can take both attitudes. One is the attitude of the dividing life into sacred and profane. Where we go, certain things are only for God, in front of God. There are other things which are where God is not allowed. You are in temple, very nice, but now you don't interfere. It's my private life, personal life. I'll do what I want. This is one approach, which is more like the Western mind, secular and religious. But another approach is, he's everywhere. What is hidden from him? So even the sins and stumblings are given to him. And he takes them up and he changes it. And then what happens? All is turned towards him in its numberless forms and offered through them to the single omnipresence in whatever form and whatever spirit we approach him, in that form and with that spirit, he receives the sacrifice. So it's not only Krishna in a particular form in a temple. You know, just recently there's something started on internet anyways. I don't want to. So it's about Bharat Mata, which is very good. So then, you know, there's a temple of Bharat Mata somewhere in India. Now I don't want to again mention. So someone posted a photo of that temple. So my first response was, we are just doing the same mistake. Now it is no more that there is a temple of Bharat Mata. It means that Bharat Mata should be treated as a temple. All of India should be a temple. Why only a particular temple where you say this is Bharat Mata's temple? This is exactly how we create a division. Now when you regard this whole Mother India is my mother, this is her body, would we ever like to mutilate her body? Would we ever like to torture her body, throw dust and all kinds of things upon her? No, we have lost that vision. We have shut God into certain temples, sacred spaces, and this was the great error of the religions. And because of that, we continue to suffer. God is in the church, in the temple. This was not there originally in India. If you go back in Vedic times, you'll hardly find temples. There are few as symbols. Because all the time in the Vedas and Upanishads, he's here. You're always carrying him. This is the temple of the Lord. Or he's in the Virat Brahmand. That's how it is. This universe is one of the aspects of the divine, Virat. It's there in the Upanishads, in the Vedas. What is this universe? It is the most outermost aspect of Brahman, of the One. What is it? He is Virat. This whole universe is his. So this is the spirit that we must get back. That is the spirit of Sanatana Dharma. Sanatana Dharma is not practiced in temples and rituals. Sanatana Dharma is a living truth which we have to live in our own life, in all the dealings and all the countless commerce of life. Regardless of whatever we may be doing, in all the activities of life, the dharma has to be practiced. And this dharma, the essence of this dharma is to keep remembering the One, keep reorienting. That it may look like I am doing for somebody, but actually I am doing it as a offering to the One. A joyous offering, not sacrifice, oh, I have to part with this. No, it's a joyous offering. And we know that it will come back to us much more purified. Whatever we have given to the divine, invariably by the touch of the divine, is bound to be purified. And that is what he says toward the end. And the fruit also of the sacrifice of works varies according to the work, according to the intention in the work, and according to the spirit that is behind the intention. But all other sacrifices are partial, egoistic, mixed, temporal, incomplete. Even those offered to the highest powers and principle keep this character. The result too is partial, limited, temporal, mixed in its reactions, effective only for a minor or intermediate purpose. So what is meant there? Even we may stand before the mother and give something, but we are doing it for what reason? Mother, give it back to me, give this to me, give that to me. So the result will also be accordingly, because our bhakti is mixed. Our sacrifice is done with a personal motive and personal intent. So what should be the correct attitude? The one entirely acceptable sacrifice is a last and highest and uttermost self-giving. It is that surrender made face to face with devotion and knowledge, freely and without any reserve, to One who is at once our immanent self, the environing constituent all, the supreme reality, beyond this or any manifestation, and secretly all these together, concealed everywhere, the immanent transcendence. For to the soul that wholly gives itself to him, God also gives himself altogether. But it's not like only there I am giving his, you know. It's not only that when I go to and put in the hundi, some money that I have given to mother, now I have the right over rest is mine. I use it the way I want to. When every penny that is spent is done in that spirit, that it is hers, not for my personal pleasure, but for the sake of at least somebody whom I love. Forget about, you know, big words. To start with that. So that, and why? Not because I'll get some return, because it's an act of love. It's an act of joy. To whom we are giving? Not to the person, but to the divine in that person. Then the divine receives everything. And then what does he give us? For to the soul that wholly gives itself to him, God also gives himself altogether. Only the one who offers his whole nature finds the self. Again, the whole nature. not some activities, not merely, you know, lighting agarbatti and some mutterings of prayer. Whole nature, all the actions, from the most mundane, that is eating food. Maybe there are more mundane activities, I don't know. But, you know, from breathing, heartbeat, everything, if it is done in that spirit of sacrifice, then one finds the self. Only the one who can give everything enjoys the divine all everywhere. Only a supreme self-abandonment attains to the supreme. So if we are thinking of ourselves, my benefit, my advantage, my nirvana, we are very far even from the spirit of Sanatana Dharma. You see, we belong to whom? If you look at the, you know, Shrivindu quotes a story of Nagananda. Heard about this story? Please Google search and find it. Nagananda is a story of a prince. It's written by a king. One of the southern kings. I'm forgetting which king. I think it was Harshvardhan dynasty or someone. So it's a story and Shrivindu is appreciated. He says this is the true spirit of sacrifice. It is not for self-immolation but for a greater good. Now the basic story is that Nagananda is a, not Nagananda, there is a prince, I am forgetting his name, very little difficult name. So this prince goes and he leaves his kingdom. He says, I want to take care of my parents and they don't want to stay in the kingdom. They want to stay in a mountain, nice place, you know, hilly terrain. So he takes them. And there he suddenly meets this girl who is the princess, and though they are complete strangers to each other, they fall in love. It starts with that. It's a love story. But look at the beauty of the prince, that the story runs through many, I think, four or five acts in the story. But there is a Nagyagya going on where all the serpents will be offered to Garuda. And when this prince comes to know, he says, no, this cannot be done. He is moved by compassion. Now, who are Nagas? Hostile beings. They too have a right to, you know, to live, to exist. You can't do that. And then a whole turn of events where he sacrifices his own life for the sake of relieving those Nagas from becoming the bhojan of Garuda. And then he experiences that joy which is called, that's why the name Nagananda. It's a much greater joy. Because why the greater joy? It doesn't matter. He is done for the worst kind of creatures. Because suddenly he is released from himself into a much greater vastness. It's no more for himself that he's thinking, he's feeling. Look at the Raja Shivi. For whose sake? For the sake of a dove. He says, take my body, flesh by flesh, gram by gram, weigh me against this dove and take me. But I have promised him that I will not let you. You know, these were the kind of Purvaj from where Lord Rama came. Bhagirath. What a sacrifice. King Harishchandra often, you know, feels so proud. Look at, in dream he has committed. Not even outwardly, in dream he has committed. Vishwamitra, that I am giving my kingdom to you. So next day, Vishwamitra comes. So he could have said like King Dushyant, look at the Kuru dynasty. Oh, I don't remember, I have forgotten. See, that was the difference. So Krishna had to intervene because they are fighting, you know, amongst. So, but look at the dynasty from which Lord Rama comes, and it's very good. They are making a temple of Lord Rama. I wish and hope that that spirit awakens in us. So what does he say, King Harishchand? I was waiting for you. Come, this is your throne. Be seated. And as he's leaving, Vishwamitra says, hold on. You have given me? Yes. What about this dress you're wearing? And the ornaments, they are kingly. Oh, takes it off. He and his wife and the son go out. Where will he earn the livelihood? So he stands on the in the market and says that I sell myself as a slave to earn livelihood. And he's picked up as a slave by whom? By the Dom Raja. You know, after this whole episode, now in Varanasi, Dom Raja is the one who conducts the last rites. Not conducts as a priest, but he is the one who arranges the wood and all this. And he is the king of the place. So Dom Raja is now, he has become a Raja. Why? Because he is the one to whom Raja Harishchandra is sold. Now a king is ready to do all the menial services of this man. Now what is happening in this sacrifice? If you cut off this idea of living by an ideal of truth, you will find it immolation. But it's not that. The king is steadfast in his practice of truth. Of course, truth is one aspect of the divine. It's not that we have to do something much greater. But he is living by that ideal of truth. And a time comes when the last sacrifice is done and Lord Shiva appears. That is the story that when Shiva appears, he says, from today onwards, anybody who dies and comes to this ghat, Harishchandra ghat, that's how it is known, will automatically come to me because the presence of Harishchandra has sanctified it. So these are the people who have shaped India. It is not through, you know, certain rules and do's and don'ts. The example is living example of complete self-giving. And for what? He is a king. He could have easily told Vishwamitra, I don't remember my dream. What dream? You may have seen. I have not seen the dream. But look at it. So he ends it by saying, only a supreme self-abandonment attains to the supreme. Only the sublimation by sacrifice of all that we are can enable us to embody the highest and live here in the immanent consciousness of the transcendent spirit. So we stop here. Thank you. Namaste.